Welcome to another episode of Journey to the Rise. In Season 2, I won't be having as many episodes as Season 1, but I feel the guests that are in Season 2 really pack a punch. In this episode, I talk with Hadonica Murphy. I wanted to have her as a guest simply because she is an incredible influence towards what is possible in life. She's been through the hardest and most difficult experiences in life, and over, she continues to rise above the challenges life has given her. One of her many challenges was transitioning a career that was considered safe to something that filled her soul with joy. She followed her heart's desire, and with hard work, perseverance, she created a successful business with her photography in rural Mississippi. Now a resident of Memphis, Tennessee, after relocating, she was once again building a successful business. I have found if you talk to someone who has built a successful business and wealth, they will often say the same thing. If you did it once, you can do it again, and the next time, you can build it faster. Hadonica has an incredible story, and I am grateful for her time and willingness to share with us in this episode. So let's get started. Please welcome my guest, Hadonica Murphy. This is a woman who created her photography business so she could give everyone an opportunity to allow people to show their confidence, their strength, and their inner sexy. She is empowered, she's sassy, she's fun, and she encourages people to be their own motivator. And I'm sure she'll bring some of that motivation to us today. Hadonica, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So where did you grow up? Where was home for you?
So I'm not a military brat, but I would like to let you know I've lived pretty much kind of all over. I spent the first 3 years of my life living in Jamaica. Then I lived in the Bahamas for 9 years. Then after we lived in the Bahamas, we moved to Florida. So it's been a little bit of all over that we grew up. I would say some the Bahamas, and then eventually the rest of it was my adulthood in the States.
Wow. And was there anything with like all that moving around with your childhood and your upbringing that kind of helped you develop into who you are today?
So I think because I move so much that I can make a friend no matter where I go, because that's a part of it. Whenever you move, you have to make new friends. And it's just made me accepting of so many different people that I meet, because going from Jamaica to the Bahamas to the States can be a little bit of a culture shock. And in the States, I lived in Florida, Wisconsin, and at Mississippi, and now Tennessee, and also in Washington. So all of those aspects, complete culture shock, and you get a different variety of people. So I will say moving has made me a very accepting person of all people.
Yeah. And what was it like to go from the Bahamas to the States?
That for me was a huge culture shock, just going to be completely honest, just because the Bahamas, it's to me, and I was there as a kid, so it's different from an adult perspective, but from a kid perspective, it's a lot of love. You can hitchhike on the highway. I've hitchhiked not thousands of times, because that's an over an exaggeration, but I've hitchhiked while I lived in the Bahamas multiple times, and never has there been a thought of, oh my God, someone can kidnap me, or oh my God, I'm gonna get sex trafficked. You know, like that stuff right. Doesn't even cross your mind. Everyone knows, we almost all know everyone there. So coming to the States, where it was like a lot of stranger danger and don't hitchhike with anyone, don't walk on the streets because someone might take you, that was huge for me. Like that was a whole thing. I didn't understand that at first.
Yeah, really. And then so you go to Florida and then you bounce into Wisconsin. And again, like you said, that's a culture shock. Like what was that transition for you? That's almost crazy.
That transition, I was in survival mode. So I was in foster care at the time when I was in Florida from like maybe 15 to 18. And it was 18 that I went to Wisconsin first. So for me, it didn't feel like I was just like enjoying what Florida was like. I was mainly in foster care. I was placed in an alternative school because I hadn't went to school for 4 years. So I had to do my GED program at an alternative school. And in Florida, the alternative schools are for bad kids, which going there made me realize that they're not necessarily bad kids. They're kids who are like misunderstood. And I met my best friend in that alternative school. Up until today, we still go ahead and talk to each other, and I'll still go ahead and fly down to Florida and see her. So going from Florida to Wisconsin was different. Wisconsin was pure survival mode because I got kicked out at 18. So I like needed a place to live and I needed a job, and I was just trying to survive in Wisconsin, and a guy I met online said I could live in the house there. So I was just like, okay, I'm going to move here and have a place to stay because I just got kicked out.
Wow. And then, but you eventually became a nurse, if I remember correctly. So how did you go from this survival mode? Yeah, so I'm a nurse
practitioner by education.
Yeah, where did you go to college?
I did some my prereqs in, not, I did some in Florida because I went to Hillsboro. Then I did some in Racine, Wisconsin at their Gateway Community College. And then the remainder of my college has been in the state of Mississippi. So you said, how did I go from, funny story, how did I go from being in survival mode to a nurse? The guy I was with in Wisconsin was not the love of my life. Like, I knew that. I just needed a place to stay. And I'm 18, so I feel no shame about it now as an adult. I literally just needed some place to stay. So if there's anyone on this podcast that might shame me for what I'm about to say, is that's on you. So the love of my life called me, and he was living in Wisconsin, not in Wisconsin, in Mississippi, while I was living in Wisconsin. And we had broken up when I was in foster care because I thought I was going to join the military for 8 years. And he was just kind of like, 8 years, that's insane. And I was like, you should wait on me for 8 years until I get out of the military. And he was like, you are insane. I can't wait 8 years. And I was in Wisconsin and his grandma died. And out of the blue, he called me and he was like, hey, I need someone to talk to you. And you're the only person that really listens to me.
Oh, wow.
Listen, we talked, and after that, I told the guy that I was with, I was like, I am heading out.
Yeah.
You know, like the love of my life, he's like, he's right there. And I got in my car. I had a little itty bitty Toyota Tercel, drove 13 hours from Wisconsin to Mississippi to the fish farm at 2 a.m. and met my husband, my now husband, in person there for the first time at 2 a.m. Now that I'm older, I'm like, oh my God, so much could have happened to you. But we've been together ever since then. We've been together for 13 years now. So it's been amazing.
What a beautiful love story.
The nursing question you asked me, right? Yeah, it's really interesting because we met when I was 16 playing video games, so we never really planned it. And when I was 16, I was like, this is the guy I'm gonna marry. Like, do you ever know? I was a Disney child, so I grew up on Disney, just like, I'm gonna get married and life is gonna be grand. When I moved to Mississippi, I still thought I might join the military, so I was training for the military. And my husband's mom, Craig, she looked at me and she was like, you talk way too much to join the military. At first, I was so offended because I was like, who is this woman? And what does she mean? I talk too much to join the military. I'm going to go become a Navy SEAL. And the Navy was like, yeah, you can't actually be a Navy SEAL because you're a woman. So I was pissed at that time. And I decided that I would not do the military. And the whole point I wanted to do the military was so I could be a doctor. And because I was a poor immigrant with, you know, nothing, the idea is join the military, have the military pay for your college.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be a doctor, but I didn't have a parent and I had no money. And I was living in the back room of my husband's or boyfriend at the time, mom's house. And I knew I wouldn't be able to pay for med school on my own. And I was like, well, I could do nursing because when my mom was sick, she had cancer. And the nurses that took care of her, they were phenomenal. The doctors were phenomenal. And that made me want to be involved in healthcare. And of course, because you're from Jamaica or the islands, your parents have high standards for you. So, you know, 16 and 18 and saying, I'm going to be a doctor. That's normal. Like, that is normal for us to do. So yeah, when I decided not to join the military, I decided I'd just become a nurse and did two years of nursing for my associates, then decided to go back for a bachelor's degree, and then decided to go ahead and do my master's. And I'm one of the first family member in our family that we knew of directly that has been able to go to college. So it's been a huge blessing.
Wow. That's incredible. And then, did you get into working in the ER as a nurse?
Yeah, so I initially started in med surg. I always wanted to be an ER nurse because I'm fast paced. I guess I'm self-diagnosed ADHD. I guess as a kid, no one really realized why I bounce from ideas to ideas to ideas. And it's as an adult that I realize it's to my advantage. So between going back to the ER, it's always fast paced, so I can keep up with what's going on with the way that my brain works. When I'm more in a slow area, that's really hard for me. So the ER was my jam. Oh, even now, when I think about it, I would like pick up a shift in the ER just for fun. The other nurses are like, "You are crazy. Why are you here working a 12-hour shift just for fun?" And I'm like, "'Cause I love being here and I love the patients."
And so, like, because an ER setting is very stressful. Like, how did you love that stress level, or how did you navigate through?
I think, yeah, so it is really stressful, but I think because I've always been in survival mode, I became a nurse when I was 20 or 21. So I was still pretty young. But the life in foster care was high stressed already. Jumping into the ER was high stress. So I was already kind of used to it and always living in survival mode. So I was used to that high stress environment. I literally thrive in a high stress environment.
Wow.
Which makes me who I am today, because in the ER, I can take control if a code comes in and I'm like, "Hey, this is what needs to be done. Calm down. Like, we're going to be all right." I was one of those ER nurses that could stay focused and not what we call a squirrel, which is the people that just spaz out in the ER.
Which is never good.
No, exactly. If your family is in there with an emergency, you do not want the nurse that's spazzing out. You want the person that can stay cool and collected and really think critically of what's going on and that's not going to freak out.
Yes. You want the nurse who's like, "I understand you have an axe in your head. Follow me, please."
You know what? Those are the funny patients because they're like, "I don't really even hurt much." And the guy with like a small cut on his finger is like, "Save me." I can tell you one time we had a guy who like checked in and he was like, "I've got my hand wrapped up because I cut it while I was cutting a tree down." So we all thought like, "Oh, this might be a small cut. He's just waiting in the waiting room, just like normal." And he comes back and he's like, "It's bleeding a little bit more. Can I just get some more gauze?" Because the ER is locked off, so he's in the lobby with just our receptionist. And we go and get gauze, and I was like, "Let me unwrap your hand." And like this, it is hanging on by a thread, and he's just been out there just like holding it together. He doesn't mention that it's a flipping chainsaw that got his hand while he was cutting down a tree. Like, that is a huge that is a huge thing. Like, it was a chainsaw that cut my hand, so you might need to see me. And he's just got it bandaged up, like, "I'll just wait." So those are our more patient. It's a true emergency, but they're so patient.
Right. You could probably write a book with all the stories you have from working in the ER.
We all joke about that. We joke about if we could just write a story, we would all be okay from what's been going on in the ER. So I feel that 100%.
Pardon the interruption. We're going to take a quick break from our conversation and be back in a minute. Are you looking to capture life's most precious moments in stunning detail? Whether it's a milestone event, a family portrait, or a special celebration, Girl Boss Photography is here to help you tell your unique story through the lens of a camera. At Girl Boss Photography, we specialize in portrait photography, which includes high school seniors, engagement sessions, families, mom and me sessions, headshots, and personal branding. I am there to capture those fleeting moments. My goal is simple: to provide you with timeless images that you'll cherish for years to come. With a passion for creativity and a keen eye for detail, we bring years of professional experience to make you feel comfortable and confident in front of the camera. And because we love our community, we're offering a special deal just for podcast listeners. Book a session with us today and get 50% off your session fee when you mention this podcast. Be seen in photos, whether it's for an engagement or couple session, family photos, high school seniors getting in their photos, or just a fun shoot with friends. We'd love to capture your moments. Head to www.girlbossphotography.com. You can send a DM on Facebook at girlbossphotography615 or head over to Instagram at girl.boss.photography to get more info and to book your personalized session. And we're back. Hedonica is such an amazing inspiration with her kind heart, and she carries such a level of consideration towards others. She also has a drive for success and a kindness towards other people, and she truly knows how to bring out the best in anyone who's around her. So let's get back to our conversation with Hedonica Murphy. And when did you realize that nursing wasn't for you anymore?
So I was travel nursing. It wasn't that nursing wasn't for me. What it is I realized that I'm an empath, and then my human design is that I'm a projector. So I'm not designed to go all of the time. Now, when I get into my go modes, I could do that. Like, I can do it all day long because I've been that person. But after years of being in the ER, I want to say it was about 4 years after I was travel nursing. That way we could pay down all of our bills and all of our debt. And that was fine. But I started to get depressed because I do take on the energy of what's going on around me. And I started learning that as I got older. So being around sick and dying patients all the time was not good for my mental health. And at the time, I didn't realize I hadn't had the opportunity to actually grieve my mom. I was just going through school and working full time. And I got my first like true real cancer patient that did remind me of my mom. And I did break down, and I was travel nursing, and I was like, okay, well, you've got to figure this out. You can't do it full time. You can only do it part time, or when it's like on your terms makes sense. But if it's a full time job, I think nursing is too hard for anyone. So around 25, which is about 4 or 5 years into nursing, I was like, oh, I don't want to do this forever. So I was like, I'll just go become a nurse practitioner.
Wow.
And I went through the schooling for that, but realized that healthcare is not what it was when I initially was going into it. Because like I said, I did grow up on Disney, so I had that unrealistic expectations or unrealist thought of, I'm going to become a nurse, and I'm going to save so many people, and it's all just, you know, it's going to change. And that's not the reality of it, right? You get into the hospital, and some patients want to take care of themselves, some patients don't. But then there's also a lot of budget issues that no one tells you about before you become a nurse. Mm-hmm. And I'm a believer of, just because someone is poor does not mean they shouldn't get good health care or get respected. So that was really hard for me in nursing to stay in it long term. I realized that it was a lot more for the money more than the patient, from like the corporate aspect. And I don't like that, because I like to sit and talk with my patients and hear about what's going on, see what's causing them to overeat, see what's making my patient, you know, what's making them depressed, what's making them not want to take their blood pressure medicine, even though they know that they need it. And unfortunately, when you work for someone else, they want to give you 30 to 35 patients a day. That does not allow you, even as a provider, to take care of your patients.
Right. Yep. They want those numbers in because the hospital itself is a business, and they forget about the fact that there's a bedside manner that should be taken into consideration for the care of these said patients.
Yes. And to me, that was sad. So it was just too much for me to handle. Like, I'm not even going to lie. The diehard nurses are like, I've done this 30 years. Like, I commend them, because I don't know how, with everything that's going on, that you don't start to lose bits and pieces of yourself over time.
Mm-hmm. So when did you start to get drawn to photography and pick up a camera?
Photography was 2016, 2017. I was still nursing, but 2016, I had a really depressive episode while I was travel nursing in Texas. And I grabbed my camera and I started taking pictures of flowers, because as a kid, I would often take pictures of flowers or the sky or nature. I didn't realize at the time that that's what I was doing. I just knew in 2016 that's what I was comfortable with, when I was taking pictures of flowers. So I did not plan to be a business. So 2016 was when I picked my camera up for the first time in a very long time.
Wow. And then how did the transition start to take place of, like, maybe I could do something with this?
So, as a nurse, you're in Mississippi, and, okay, so growing up super poor, this is where mindset comes into play, right? I grew up super poor, so when I started photography at the hospital I was working at, that was full-time when I wasn't travel nursing, pay was $25 an hour. So I was like, man, if it's $25 an hour and I'm at the hospital when I'm doing photography, I at least need to make $25. And I started doing $25 to give everyone all of the digital images. And then over time, I was like, because people were like, holy shit, $25? Yeah, we're going to jump on that. And they did. What you don't realize is you end up overworked. You're doing all these digital images and you actually make a lot less than you thought that you would make because you don't have a business mind or a business structure yet, but it comes with time, right? It comes with time. So that was 2017, though, was the first year I was like, okay, this could be a business. I bumped into Sue Bryce on YouTube, and she said something that I thought was hilarious. At the time, I thought it was. Now I look, and I was like, you're such a silly woman back then. She was like, you can make $1,000 just in one photo session. And I was like, man, I went into my house, and I was like, I don't know who this lady is. But we have struggled. I don't know what she means. You can make $1,000 doing pictures. I don't even make $1,000 a night working in the hospital. But again, I'm from the island. So while we might be skeptical of things, we want to know how it's done. How did you do it? And I have a mindset of if someone else can do it, then that opportunity is also available to me. And I can also do the same thing. So that's kind of how that started. 2017 was my first real year in business where I started making money.
Wow. And you knew your self-worth, like recognizing like, hey, you know, she's doing it. Why can't I do it? So did that help you kind of transition for I need to raise my rates?
Oh, yeah. So I ended up becoming one of the hand-selected mentors from Sue. She realized like how she would see my post in the group. And I was like, how do you paint a backdrop? Or how do you do this? And then within a few months, I had my first $1,000 sale. So it grew really fast. And once I saw that I could have my first $1,000 sale, the rest was history. I started deep diving into more so self-value, mindset work, just myself. Because I realized that we're the one that blocks ourselves. We're the one that allow people to pay us next to nothing. We're the ones that set these rates of $25 or $100. Let me rephrase that. It's obviously different when you don't have a degree like I did as a nurse to decide what it is that you want to make and get connected with other people. So I'm not saying Joe Blow down the down the road in a really terrible house can just get people in automatically paying $1,000. But I do believe that Joe Blow can start pricing himself appropriately, making sure that he works on his skills and become one of the best photographers in that area. That way they could demand the prices that they want to. And you don't even have to be the best. There are tons of photographers that are local to me that are 1,000 times better than me. I just have a better business mindset and self-value for myself.
Yeah. And that's so empowering because I think that's where people, they lose that, like they, like you were saying, like you get blocked, we block ourselves. But when we have the mindset, we're willing to put in the work, deliver a quality product, then we can charge what it's worth because there's value there.
Yeah. And it's exactly. And it's going to work. When people tell me they're like, because I'm one of the coaches now. So when people are like, it is not going to work, I'm like, I am a Black woman that did this in the Mississippi Delta. You would have to know what the Mississippi Delta is like to understand how big of an accomplishment that is. All the business in the hometown that I grew in, Black owned businesses are in the back part of downtown, not even the front. So the fact that I was able to start this business in my home and take it to six figures in my living room was a huge accomplishment. And that I want, for me, that means that anyone else can do it, right? Because yes, if ma'am. I can do it in a population with 12,000 with a bunch of racist people, it's still pretty harsh. If I can do that, then I know that other people can do it everywhere else. You will reach out and find your people. They will come to you and they will spend.
And you were in, was it Cleveland?
And honestly, I'm going to say, yeah, I was in Cleveland, Mississippi. And I will say the people that don't spend with you, they make way for people that do want to spend with you. Not everyone wants cheap. Everyone wants, not even the photographer, but the candle maker that's making 20 candles for $10 for one person. That person is going to be overworked, stressed out, and they can't give each client the need and service that they need.
Right. And Cleveland, Mississippi, that's not a very big town. So like, what steps did you do? Because you're right, that is an accomplishment. I lived in Mississippi and sadly there's way too much racism. I've seen a shift. I will say a little prop to Mississippi. I'm seeing a shift and I'm proud of that. Mm-hmm. But like, how did you find your way into building a successful photography business in such a small town?
So I will say that I didn't give up. And when I started photographing people that other people didn't want to photograph, we were in the Mississippi Delta. So while you may have had other Black photographers, you didn't have other Black photographers who were delivering the service that I was delivering. And the white photographers were there. They were not as good as I was, and they weren't doing the same service that I was either. And they did have a lot of the townspeople in their pocket. I'm not saying this was easy. It was very frustrating because when I would call the schools to see if I could do senior portraits or if I could do school pictures for the school, they would be like, no, we already have our own photographer. This is who we use. It was almost like a gatekeeping aspect, but I just continued being myself and talking about why I wanted to photograph women, and especially Black women. I lost my mom at a very young age, so whenever I could sit down with a strong Black woman and she would just pour in her knowledge and her wisdom into me, that made a whole huge of a difference in my business. And I started getting more clients that the other photographers were not photographing. There's such a big split that when you pull up a photographer in Cleveland, Mississippi, my portfolio is possibly one of the most diverse. So I made sure my business was built on inclusion and diversity for everyone, not just Black clients, not just white clients, not just Asian clients, but everyone, straight, just like, it didn't matter to me because, like I said, I'm from the islands. We're taught to love everyone. So if you're gay, it didn't matter. I wasn't that person with the Bible belt that's like, oh, let's just go out to this cotton field and take pictures. I don't even do pictures in cotton field just because my ancestors, I'm like, they don't want me out there. Right. So I just don't. I refuse. Yeah. And I feel like that's okay because I know Absolutely. What my boundaries are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I would say that's why my business excelled, was that it really included everyone. And I will tell you, while I did live in Cleveland, Mississippi, I was able to find some people that of different color that were super sweet and always nice to me. It was just more overall. So it was more overall the way the community was built. There's a big train track that runs through town that kind of differentiates area. Like, this is the nice side of town. This is the rough side of town. And unfortunately, disproportionately, the rough side of town was always the African-American community. So like, living there and seeing the disparities of, these roads aren't getting fixed. The schools are literally 5 minutes apart. Why don't they have the same updated books? Why do we have two schools here that are just that close that are fighting against each other? I think it was 2017 that they technically desegregated our schools. That way everyone could get appropriate funding. Yeah, wow. It was all like on CNN, and I had moved there with my husband. And I was like, where did you let me drive to?
Like, where have you taken me?
Exactly. That was my thought in my head. I was like, what? Because it's so different.
Right.
But you make life good wherever it is that you are.
Yeah. And people, because but with it being such a small town, I would imagine people were driving a bit of a distance to get to you.
Oh my God. I had people that would drive 3 hours. I had a lady drove 6 hours that came down and see me. I had people that were flying in from Memphis, and then like they would fly into Memphis and drive to Cleveland for my photo shoot. And like I said, my photos are not like spectacular. To me, they're great. Every woman I photograph, I'm like, oh my God, these are the most beautiful portraits I've taken. Yeah. Like every session I do, it progressively gets better. I think for each of my client, though, it was important to have someone that held space for them and made them feel safe. But yeah, that was Mississippi, but it's okay.
Yeah. And you spend quite a bit of time with your clients. So what is your process to help clients get ready for their sessions?
So as far as I am a planner, but not really a planner, I like to go with the flow. And when my planning consists of going with the flow, so it's asking my clients, like, how do they want to be photographed? Like, I'm looking at you right now, and for your photo shoot, I would love to create something with beautiful flowers that, like, showcased you in nature as, like, this is hippie loving person. That's the vibe that you give me whenever I look at you. So that's how we would tailor a photo shoot for you. So each of them, it's different. Per client, some people want to go outside. Some people, they want to stay inside. Some people are like, I want to bring my dogs, or my mom used to love butterflies, so I want to be photographed surrounded by butterflies. There's so many different detail for each client that there's not just everything fits one person. I think that's what makes me stand out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And taking that time to recognize like that personality, and that comes from probably some of your nursing background and your bedside manner, to recognize personality traits and noticing things and then pulling them out so that they can feel really good and confident in their session.
Yes, I will say being a nurse helped me. And then I worked at Walgreens for 5 years while I went through nursing school full time. So Walgreens 100% helped me with that customer service and listening to the client, and just then nursing helped with helping me pick up on those things that you said, or just noticing. I think a lot of us as women, we go around wearing this mask that's not the true us, right? And underneath it is just like, it's like this kid that's just been like, society has been like, okay, you've turned 18, you're a woman now. And like at 16, I was like, I still want to dress up and wear makeup. And I still love watch Finding Nemo. What do you mean? I'm an adult right? Now. It's time for me to get a job and figure it out. But this isn't just for the 18-year-olds. This goes into women in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s who want to come back to that vulnerable, childlike version of themselves and really get dressed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is what we, and my studio, that is a place that I connect, is for everyday woman to come in and tap into that inner child.
So when you were in Cleveland, did you have a studio or did you work out of your home?
I actually didn't get a studio until the pandemic. Like before that, all the way up until 2020, we were rocking and rolling out of my home. I will tell you, I turned my dining room into part of my studio, part of my living room, and our extra bedroom turned into our boudoir part of the studio. So I did take up like 3 rooms in my house. And then pandemic, my husband was like, I think the dogs can get COVID, so we can't have all these people in the house. My husband is like nuts over our dogs, and he was like, you're gonna have to get a studio. And I was like, oh, I have to get a studio? Which was phenomenal, because I always wanted a studio, but I couldn't justify the overhead. And then yeah, I found this, I said, seeing the beauty underneath what someone else might see, right? I saw this building that had been on the market and been out for rent for about 10 years. Since I'd been in Mississippi 13 years, it had been on the market for like 10 years. It's just like no one did anything with it. The walls were dirty brown. It was not cute. And I saw it and I was like, I see the, like, I can make this in the studio. So we pulled all the floors, redid the floors. I painted all the walls white. I took down like the old dated fans in the ceiling, and I did chandeliers. It's so beautiful. I love my studio there.
That's amazing. Do you still have it?
Yeah. So right now we're running two studios. We're running one in Mississippi and one in Tennessee. My hopeful goal will be to close my Mississippi one, because I don't like driving all the way down there. But if my client is paying me, I will make the drive. Right. I'm trying to see if I want to start going ahead and working with maybe an associate photographer. I want to see where the growth for that goes. But, you know, last 2 years, my focus had shifted to investment properties. So now it's like all the money I make from photography pays for my retirements for when I'm older.
That's amazing. And you've talked about Tennessee, and not that long ago, you relocated to Memphis. What inspired that move?
Truthfully, I decided to move after one of my friends was a member of a boating club in Mississippi that had a rule that no Black people were allowed. And this, I felt like this was a really good friend to me. And we had taken beach trips together. I'd been to her home to watch Harry Potter. We were going to the gym together. Like, she talked about babysitting my kids one day when I had them. And she didn't invite me out to the lake. It was weird. It was Memorial Day weekend. And she told me she wasn't doing anything. And I saw it on social media. All of them were like, my other friends too, all of them were on the boat. And they all had like their American flag and Confederate flag. And I was like, okay, that's a little bit weird. But I am in the South. So, okay. You know, I try not to judge people. But then I am also a very inquisitive person. So I was like, hey, girl, you know, like, what happened? You told me you weren't doing anything for Memorial Day. And then I saw this on social media. And she was like, well, yeah, we had a get together in the lake, but I couldn't invite you. And I was just like, oh, okay. At first, I didn't understand what she meant by that. And she was just kind of like, we can't have Black people there. It's a rule. And I can lose a lot of clients if I had you there. And I was just like, in my head, it was a what the fuck moment. And I realized, like, people were like, what do you do? Do you expect her to, like, lose her job over this? And I was like, yeah, I expect her to, like, not be with racist people at this boating club that are, like, in our community. Because if you have a young child, your child is going there. The year before, a little Black boy was removed from the lake. But they said it was because they had too many visitors. And realizing as I get older, I was like, that's not the truth. So coming from the islands, we don't experience racism the way American people experience racism. Our racism comes from the tourist that comes in and they're entitled. There's not much hate or, like, brooding, or I don't know how to explain it. It is completely different than what I experienced in Mississippi. So that was a big learning curve, because everyone, I'm freaking out. I'm like, why do we even still have a no Black people rule going on? How do people in the community know about this? And they were like, the country club is like that. That's just the way it is. You're making a big deal out of this. Like, you're crazy. And I thought I was going crazy. Like, I was working with my therapist, and my therapist was like, Hedonica, you are not crazy. Like, that is racist. That is unusual. Like, that is not normal. And I was like, I didn't think it was normal. So after that, I just kind of decided to move, because of course I went into obsessive mode and looked at all of the members at this boating club and looked up their Facebook. And I was just like, I don't want to be the only Black friend. That rubs me really weird when it's like that. And I could not conform to this is the way it's always been. So I moved to Memphis. And I will say Memphis has been on the news, you know, like the crime part is really hard, but I've had an amazing life since moving up here. We did another investment properties. I'm 30 minutes for the airport compared to when I was driving 2.5 hours to get to the airport. So I chose Memphis because it was also one of the more diverse areas. I looked at Colorado, but the percentage for African American was super low. And if I'm going to have kids one day, even though they're going to be little caramel babies, I want them to have a lot of diversity around them. Like, all people, you know what I mean? Like, that's really important to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And people, when they think Memphis, they do think of the crime rate, because that is a big thing. They think of Elvis and the tourists in Beale Street. But when you get down to the root of Memphis, you get to the people, and they are good. They understand hardship. They understand you put kindness over other things. And they also have really good food.
Really good food. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. That's, I'm glad that you're seeing that. Forget about. Yeah, people are kind of weird. And like, remember I told you I love picking up, right? So when I came to Memphis, just for a little security, I started picking up some shifts at the hospital because I was like, oh my God, I like, what am I doing that, you know, like I built a business in a small city. Am I going to be able to make it in a big city like Memphis? And like, realistically, Memphis isn't a big city. New York is a big city. But me, I felt like I was in New York. But working with the people, if you were kind to someone, they'll be kind to you. And yeah, there's crime, but there's crime literally everywhere that you go to. It doesn't matter where. If you mind your business and stay to yourself, I think that you, you know, be aware of your surroundings. I really think you'll be okay. Don't get involved in all the drama with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just watch where you go in Memphis, and you know at certain times of the night, you just don't go into certain neighborhoods, and you be mindful. You are in a larger city.
Anyway. Yeah, I'm not a clubber. I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. So I tend to stay in the house. I get up too early. Yeah, exactly. That's what the issue is. Yeah. Even in Jamaica just now, I wanted to go to a concert, and they were like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I'm ready. And then they're like, it starts at 10 p.m. And I was like, that is a hard pass for me because 10 p.m. at night, I'm trying to get into my deep sleep.
Right. Yeah, I get up too early for anything past like 8 p.m. When people are like, let's go for dinner at 8. I'm like, 8? I'm like, do you know what time I get up in the morning?
No, that's me too. That's 100% me while that's going on. I'm like, I gotta sleep.
I'm a responsible adult. I'm not in college anymore. I need my sleep, and I can't do that.
I just need sleep.
Right. So with you being in Memphis, I have to ask, have you had a Huey's burger yet?
No. Is that where I need to go get burgers from?
1000%. Yes, I will send you the details on that. Yes, Huey's a classic in Memphis.
Any food? I haven't found a Cordova barbecue joint yet. I live in Cordova, so this is perfect.
I know. That's where I used to live, so I will make sure you get hooked up with the Huey's in Cordova. I used to go every Thursday after my belly dance class in Midtown. And
oh my gosh,
yeah,
thank
like you'll see the toothpicks in the ceiling. Yeah, it's my favorite place to go for a burger.
Well, my husband loves burgers.
I always
get
the steak fries. Okay.
We love steak fries. Five Guy is his go-to. So if this Huey place could stop five, like top Five Guys, he'd be good.
I like Huey's better than Five Guys. And Huey's reminds me, I don't know if you watch Gilmore Girls, but Huey's reminds me of what I think Luke's burger and fries would taste like.
I love how we know what we think the food tastes like from a TV show. I do the same thing. Oh my gosh. And hey, I don't know what part of Wisconsin you're on, but there used to be this QP pizza place that, not pizza, burger place that I would go to. It's like an old fashioned diner. They do the little small burgers that they used to do back in the day with milkshakes, and they cook it up right in front of you. Now that is delicious. It's like a little, it's not a drive-in, but you go in and they have the big red couches, just like when it used to be like the 20s.
Wow.
And they
have to look that up.
They had the best burgers. So I'll find that for you too. That way you would have it.
Yes, please. Yeah. I'm in the north. I'm like Canada. Like, think Canada. Oh. You could probably see an elk or a moose.
I was more racing and I was like right in front of Lake Michigan. So
sound like it's worth a road trip though.
yeah it's really cool. Or just whenever you're coming back.
So with you being in a bigger city versus a smaller town, are you finding it's a little bit easier getting booked with your photography sessions?
Was it easier? I get a lot of inquiries, but a lot of people aren't accustomed to my prices here, which that's okay. Like, at the end of the day, I'd rather get the no's before you come and step foot into my studios. I am currently booked until we're booking up for March right now. And most of them are my Memphis location. I maybe have like 3 or 4 in Mississippi, but I think that's because I've stopped marketing Mississippi as much. And now I'm marketing very strongly Memphis.
Awesome. And what kind of challenges are you finding that you're facing as you're building your business?
Here in Memphis, That I have to in-person network more. Like, that has been hardest for me because I'm a social person, but only to a certain extent. Like, I love to be social, but I also like to come back to just be by myself. So doing like all these one-to-ones, meeting with people and having to network to get to know people here in Memphis, that's been more of a struggle for me.
Yeah. And you talk in your blog about the myths of boudoir photography, and you talk in your post about how the myth of you have to be naked, that a person has to be perfect, that you'll be judged and everyone will see your photos. And how do you help people kind of overcome these myths and these ideas?
Well, I guess I did a trip to France and Greece last year, I want to say. Or maybe it was Paris the year before and then Greece the year after. One of the two. I try to go to Italy once a year. I won't be going this year because I'm going to go to Egypt instead. Everywhere I went in Paris, there were beautiful portraits, beautiful painting of ancient Greece women with rolls down their back. And they had a tummy like I had a tummy, and they had this beautiful drape over their body. And I looked at all of them with all the mm-hmm. rolls, and I wondered where that societal thought that a woman should not have a roll came from, or shouldn't have stretch marks came from, because it wasn't from these historic paintings that I was looking at in the art, in the, the art museum. It couldn't have been from there. So in my eyes, like I said, it could come from the island. So I believe everybody is beautiful and everybody is worthy of being documented, you know, regardless of what's going on. And for me, I don't believe in the male gaze. In your boudoir portrait session, it's more so connecting with why you feel beautiful, why you feel sexy, why you feel that you're at your highest power. Because for me, sexy is not for someone else. It's for you. When you are feeling sexy and in your power, there's nothing you can't accomplish. That's why I love doing boudoir photography, because these women can step outside after a boudoir session and they can walk into any business that they have and hold that composure, hold that confidence, because for them, they've already seen themselves most vulnerable. And that most vulnerable person mm-hmm. was really strong that they saw in front of them and showed a lot of love to themselves. So that's my why for boudoir.
And you do an excellent job with it. It's truly just poetically beautiful behind a camera. And what about your branding photos? What is your process?
For branding, it's the same thing working with them on why their brand is important, right? You want to be true to your brand. You don't want to copy paste what you see people in corporate America doing all the time. You don't have to copy paste what you see other photographers doing. Like, there used to be a moment for me where I felt like, okay, I had to straighten my hair. I had to wear these blazers, and like, I couldn't be myself. And I'm a bubbly person, so I love wearing bright colors. I love wearing tulle skirts, and I love wearing loafers, Converse. I am not a high heels person. I will never be a high heels pencil skirt person. And I tried for a moment to be that, and I was losing myself. What I don't want for my branding clients to do is for them to ever lose themselves. So that's why I say, when you come in for your branding session, we sit down and we talk about, how do you want your clients to feel when they're with you? Like, do you want to be in this black suit with a button up tie up to their neck? Because then they're going to, when they see you like that, they're going to feel like they need to be like that, right? They're going to feel like they need to be a, mm-hmm. I'm not going to say uptight, because that's just someone's personality. Each personality is different. So I'm a firm believer in your brand. If you can stay true to yourself, if you're a bubbly, bright person, or you're a type A needing to have the suit up to your neck, then you be that, and I can be there for whoever it is that you need me to capture.
Yeah. And you made a statement about embracing fear, celebrating life by making self-care a priority, push boundaries, and learn how to overcome fear, and how it can help you create the life you want. What was it about this process that helped you create the life that you wanted?
I had a fear that I would always be poor,
growing up and I look at my mom or the dad that I didn't have. And for a moment, I used to say that's not how I wanted to be. I am more like my mom now than I have ever been. My mom was, she was a hustler. And here I am. I'm like, oh, okay. So I became the hustler of my family. My mom had her, she had like her own little convenience shop that she would sell little snacks around to the kids. Back then, I didn't realize that my mom was one of the very first entrepreneurs. And she did it while she was scared. She had two young girls that she had a very young age. And even though she was scared and didn't know how to provide for us, she figured it out. And that's what I decided to do was I knew I didn't want to be, my fear was staying poor forever. So I knew that I had to step up. If I stayed the exact same way and didn't go to school or didn't take a leap of faith of charging $1,000 or didn't decide that I'm going to watch the video, even though when Sue said $1,000 for a portrait session in my head, I was like, this lady is crazy. That's not possible. It wasn't possible for me yet because I feared that I couldn't do it. But once I realized that I could, that fear went away and I continued to increase my prices and I still felt fear, but I did it with fear anyway. And if you don't feel fear about something you're doing, then you might not need to be doing it.
Yeah.
But I am a boundary pusher. I am a boundary pusher.
Yeah.
I push myself in different ways. I like to overcome the things that my brain tells me I can't, like skydiving or bungee jumping or jumping off of a ship. When my mind is telling me you can't do this, even though logically I know that I'm not going to get hurt, I'm okay. My mind is still scared because it still has that prehistoric dated mind with your fear, your fight and flight that comes in, even though it's safe. Even though you know that it's safe because everyone else in front of you has jumped off of this ledge, your brain is going to tell you that you can't and you're going to be the one that's going to die and get splattered in the water or whatever. But that's not true. That's just a fear that you created in your head because you just saw the last 10 people jump in and some of them are going to come and jump again until it's your turn. Same thing with your business.
Right.
Like how many people have come before you that you're seeing succeeding? Some people who may have started photography or started doing makeup or started their videography business after you. And some of those people excel, but some people don't. And sometimes it's because of, I feel like some people excel and some people don't because of obviously obstacles that come in your way. Like for example, you are a care provider. So you're going to go through caretaker fatigue, caretaker burnout. You're not going to have the focus that you need to 100% focus on your business right now because your heart is somewhere else. Your heart is somewhere else, but if you can teach yourself that my heart is still somewhere else, but I still want to grow this business, these are my prices. And I fear so much that no one will book me at these prices, but I'm going to commit to it. Because I am a caretaker and my time is so valuable that I need to be paid a lot of money to be away from my family right now. And that's it. That's it for you right there. When you say, when you realize that, you will never go to another $300 session when you know that you're away from your mom. And those moments are most important.
Yeah. And if someone is wanting to set up like headshots for themselves with you or a boudoir session or a branding session, but they keep saying, I need to lose another 10 pounds or I'm just not photogenic. Like, what do you say to those people who keep putting off having their photo taken with you?
So the thing is, I'm not going to run you down and book your photo shoot. Like, you are a grown woman. When you call me and you tell me you need to lose 10 pounds before you do your photo shoot, I understand. I am good for at least 15 to 20 pounds in camera when it comes to posing and lighting you, and you're going to be the exact same person, but I'm going to pose you so well that you would have thought that you may have lost weight or not. As far as being photogenic, it's a challenge for me whenever we work together for me to take the best portraits of you. So if we decide that you come in and you feel you're not photogenic in any of these pictures, that person doesn't have to purchase them. I only want you to purchase what you love, but I can guarantee you that I'm going to take some of the best portraits of your life. So you'll have an issue with not buying too many images. You don't have to wait to lose weight, like to do your portraits. Like I've seen so many people And I'll share this with you. I had a client who came in and she booked a portrait session for her family. And she was like, I want to get these pictures done. It's been a long time since we've done family portraits. My mom is getting older and I think my mom might pass. So I want to make sure that my mom has these portraits for herself. And then the next year she was diagnosed with cancer and she passed. And she left her two daughters, her sister, and her mom behind. And those portraits became the most priceless gift for her daughter. Wasn't for anyone else, not even that, but then became one of the most priceless gifts for her mom, for her sister, and for the two daughters she left behind. She thought she was giving everyone else a gift for that grandma for when the grandma left, but she left before the grandma could leave this earth. So it's like, why wait? You never know what can happen.
Right, right. And you also work as a business coach. How did you get into business coaching?
Business coaching, I decided that I wanted to start teaching other people my experience and what the way I did my thing for business. I think a lot of people get so overwhelmed thinking like, how do I start an LLC? What kind of business do I want to do? Am I going to make money for it? When you step outside, there's a business on every single corner, and adding your business to that corner, that's okay. Like, don't be fearful of that. Like, I never understand when someone comes to me to do coaching and they're like, I just don't know if I can be a business owner. And I'm like, just drive down the street. Everywhere you go, someone is selling you something. Everywhere, it could be the man at Walmart that is washing your windows and then making you pay him $5 when you come out, even though you didn't book it. Like, everyone has a business, so you can become a business owner. Like, there's no reason. Look around you and look at all the people doing it. There is no reason you can't do it. There's nothing tattooed on your forehead that's like, this one here, not a business owner. She won't do it. It's you that's holding you back. It's like you that's in your head that's like, I don't know if I can do it. What if I fail? What if no one likes me? There's 7 billion people in this world. People are going to like you. People are going to probably even love you because you're doing this. You're not. And I will say one thing that is different in our business. We don't do everything we do just for profit. Profit is a byproduct. The money is a byproduct of the way we make people feel, the way we take care of them, the way we photograph them.
For someone who's maybe caught up in a career path that isn't working for them, like it's just not the life that they want. Like, what advice would you give someone who really wants to live their life and pursue a goal or a dream?
My first question would be, what is that life that you want to live? What is it? Can I use you as an example?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll just do like a really quick demo, real quick through it for your audience. So, okay, here we are. You've told me you don't like the career path you're on. What is your career path that you're currently on that you don't like that much?
It's probably the caregiving. That's not where I thought I would be, you know. I want to do, I know, like, I'm not trying to say anything negative towards my mom, but it's just not, that's just,
no, it's not hard. Even your mom. I've been a nurse for 10 years. Being a caretaker, and you're probably a 24-hour, 7 days a week caretaker. It's not correct. A, you get to leave after 12 hours. So that is definitely, It's really hard because that's not even a career you get paid well for or one that you went to school to do. You know what I mean? So it's just thrown upon you.
Right. Yeah.
I just thrust it on correct. You. Right.
And yes. And full disclosure, I'm not close with my mom. Tried for many years, but we're just not. So she doesn't know who I am. She has Alzheimer's. She's 84 with Alzheimer's. Mm. So that makes it very challenging. But my dream is to do photography, visual storytelling, and writing full time.
Okay. I think you should do some visual storytelling with your mom and her case that's going on. As you know, dementia and situations like that, like dementia, there's no getting better. It's just until you pass. thing. Correct. Get comfortable mm-hmm. until you pass. So this is where my nursing aspect comes in. Depending on how you're having to take care of her, could she go to a really skilled facility and you document the life that she has there, document some portraits with, not portraits, but visual storytelling for the other people there. She probably needs somewhere where people can keep her engaged. And I'm not saying drop your mom in a nursing home. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying find her a right. facility that is properly equipped, because you said your mom was how old? 80 years old?
She just turned 84.
84
yeah. with late stage Alzheimer's.
You are in the prime of your life. This is where you get to buckle down, because before you know it, in 30 years, you'll be 80. And you don't want to sit there. When I used to work as a nurse, a lot of my biggest regret from the families, the patients that were passing that were older, was that they didn't get to do, which I guess for me is probably why I do the stuff I want to do, because so many people told me that they spent their lives caring for everyone else but themselves. They worked the jobs that the families mm-hmm. needed them to work to pay bills. They kept the jobs that their parents thrusted on them once they got out of college at 18. They decide their whole career path. As human beings, we're multifaceted. If we get stuck in one thing too long, it doesn't work well for us and our brain isn't learning. And then we end up developing dementia because we hadn't learned anything in the last few years. So I like to script out what I love for my life to be and the life that I want for myself. I like to write it out, talk about it. Like, I get to walk out to the beachfront every day and dip my toes in the ocean to see if it's warm or cold before I go for a swim. That's the life that I'm building for myself now in the future. So if you know that you want to work on your photography business, even while you're still there being a caretaker, you're going to have to start doing it part-time and still continue to write, still do those things that give you joy, and then pull away the things that you're not supposed to be doing right now. Just because she's your mom doesn't mean you owe her anything. Some of our parents don't even take care of us when we're born. And they owe us that right. because they brought us into this world and we didn't ask to be here. But what parents have to realize is mm-hmm. just because you have a child doesn't mean that they're supposed to spend the rest of their lives or the prime of their lives taking care of you, especially when you weren't a parent that was necessarily there for your child like you should have been. Facilities are okay. Don't feel guilty for putting your mom in a facility where people are trained to take care of patients like that. If she has insurance to do it, because that's always a big thing, is the money and insurance. But that's what I would do.
Right.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Because dementia is so hard. One yeah. morning, it's really hard.
Yeah. 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 Sundowners and the aggression is very, very real.
That's what I was
going to
tell you. You'd be getting your ass yeah. whooped. When I was nursing full time, the dementia patients were the hardest, because during the day they were amazing. And at night, then they're so strong. I think that was the part that like surprised me. They are strong as heck. And I'm sure you'll notice that probably mm-hmm. with your mom. When they start going down through sundowners, you're like, you can walk. You can walk like that. You can hit me with this stick or this chair or whatever they decide to pick up at and throw at you. They get really strong.
Right.
It's a lot. You mm-hmm. have to remember you only live one life, and this is your life. You should get to live it how you want to, not just be thrown responsibilities that are not necessarily your responsibilities. And that's how it is when I talk to my other clients.
Because it is tough.
It is. And You don't owe anyone that. It's like you don't owe anyone that. I feel like you should remember that.
Yeah. And as far as you, what's ahead for you in your upcoming year?
Well, we just closed on another rental property, so that's been congratulations. My big thing. Is I'm not preparing for my retirement, but I like to plan ahead. I love having fun now, and I love traveling, but if God sees fit to say that I'm going to become an 80-year-old woman, I want to make sure that I am an 80-year-old woman living by the beach. So for this year, my main focus yes. is scaling my photography business and buying another real estate property. I'm hoping to do one to two a year, and I mean, it just makes sense. Once they started paying you, you're just like, I wish someone had told me this when I was in my 20s. I could have bought my first home and did it. But no one, they don't teach you this stuff.
Yeah.
No one teaches you this.
No, they don't teach you anything about real estate investing in college.
Financial literacy was a waste of my time. Yes. I took so many art classes that were mandatory art and music classes. Like, you could have been teaching me about how to write a check. Anything,
right?
But, yeah, anything but this. What is it, the Pallagram theory or whatever? What is it, you've been talking about an algebra? I can't even remember it now.
Yes, the quadratic formula I've yet to use beyond that the Thank test you. In those semesters.
Oh girl, I took so many.
I'm sure there's algebra. Some scientists out there. Yes, yeah, trig. I'm like, I'm sure there's somebody out there using those, but
not us.
No, I would have much rather spent my time, right? Yes. So if someone wants to work with you, book a session, where can they find you?
Well, best place to reach me is on my website, hedonicusphotography.com. We have a little questionnaire section that you can let us know what it is you're looking for. You also have information you can read about our interest-free financing that we offer clients. Then you can just follow me on Instagram or TikTok at Hedonicus Photography. And Hedonica is just Hadonica, and then add a S with photography on it to find me.
Amazing. And I'll get all of that in the show notes. You are such an inspiration. I'm so grateful I found you. I think I discovered you during the pandemic, and you are just so, you're just someone who, whenever I get like down or frustrated, I'm like, you know what? I need a little burst. I head on over to your Instagram or your blog and just get that little zhuzh of it of energy. But I just really do appreciate your time. I am so excited to see what life brings for you, because I know it's just going to be filled with blessings.
Thank you so much. And I'm really excited too. I've been feeling really good. It's only great things from here, right?
1000%. That's it for today's episode with Hedonica. She is truly exceptional, and I am thankful and grateful for the time she shared with us. On our next episode, we talk with Mrs. Sherry Grossman, a music teacher who has changed the lives not only with her teaching skills, but the incredible opportunity she offers to her students.
Fall of 2006, I was on their marching band staff and started going to as many marching band rehearsals as I could. And again, doing woodwind sectionals, and I was their woodwind person for quite a while. And then I had Ellie in 2007, and then the new building opened a little bit after that for Mount Juliet High School. And they had an assistant band director who eventually became the theater teacher. So when the assistant band director position opened up, Tony Cox called me and said, "Are you ready? Let's go." You know.
Thank you so much for joining me in this episode. I want to give a thank you to those who are listening out there from Wautoma, Wisconsin, Brentwood, Nashville, Tennessee, West Sacramento, LA, Milwaukee, Chicago, Atlanta, Minneapolis, Portland, and all the way to Singapore and Indonesia. I really thank you for taking the time to listen. Feel free to join us on Instagram, Facebook, or on YouTube for sneak peeks and clips from upcoming episodes. And before we go, please remember to be kind to you. When you're kind to yourself, it is easier to be kind to others. My name is Lucretia, and you've been listening to Journey to the Rise.